Hello, my name is Jim Williams with the personal injury law firm of Burnett Williams. You're about to watch an episode in our series From Injury to Justice. If you like what you hear, please click below to subscribe. Hello, I'm Jim Williams with the law firm of Burnett Williams, and here today as part of our series of Injury to Justice, I have special guest Kimberly Robb.
Hello.
Welcome. Hello, welcome. Let's talk a little bit about some of these books I've pulled out here. Of course, to go to law school, you have to enjoy reading, and this is an example of some of the things you need to read if anyone out there is pondering law school. But let's talk about damages. What are damages in your experience?
Damages is the major part of our case. You know, once we know we have liability in a lock, now we've got to really focus the case on damages.
And when you say liability is a lock, what do you mean?
So if we're done with liability and we said, okay, once the jury gets past that, if we know we're getting past that, we know that we're not going to have any issue, we know who's at fault, the defendant's at fault, how do we show the jury the damages? Where are we going to show them what to award? Well, the Virginia model jury instruction kind of did it for us, and we went to law school when we used books. The kids today do not use this in law school. They're looking it up online. This is the Virginia model jury instructions. So this is what we give. The judge will give instructions to the jury before they go out to deliberate. The model jury instruction that we're going to look at today is instruction number 9, which is general personal injury and property damage. Typically, I know we don't really handle property damage. A lot of times we let clients handle that on their own. And one of the reasons is because we're not going to take a fee off your car.
Right.
Then you're not being made whole, right? You're not going to be made whole for your car. But everything else in here is pretty much fair game. So first, Jim, we got any bodily injuries the plaintiff sustained and their effect on their health according to their degree and probable durations.
So just so the listening audience understands, the jury instruction is given by the judge at the conclusion of the case.
And then they bring it back with them into the jury room.
Right.
So they don't have to memorize it, which is great. But it's numbered. This one is numbered, number 9. And on our closing argument, I'm sure you do the same thing, you tell the jury you can award for each of these things.
Categories.
Only 2 of them are economic. That's your medical bills and your lost wages. All the rest of them are non-economic. So we got your physical pain and mental anguish, your any disfigurement or deformity. So if you were scarred, and any associated humiliation or embarrassment. So any type of scar, knocking out of a tooth, you have to get your tooth fixed. And maybe you were walking around with a gap for many months until that got fixed.
So if you have a scar, say on a young girl's face versus a scar on the leg of an older man, is that different?
Absolutely.
In terms of the value of the
absolutely
award?
There's always that thing, you know, scars are kind of cool, but if you know a woman has a scar across of her face because she was cut with the windshield and glass, jury might see that very differently.
Right.
Another thing sometimes with scars, and we will talk to our clients about, is it can change color depending on the weather.
Right.
So you might have a scar that is kind of discolored, but then you get a little bit of a tan in the summer, it stays white. Or you have a keloid scar, which is the scars that are bumpy, and they can get fixed with plastic surgery, but sometimes that's just out of the question because it's not covered by insurance. So that's something that comes in. Any inconvenience? Well, inconvenience. How inconvenient is it when you have to go to 35 sessions with a physical therapist, or your pre-op appointments if you're going for an operation, post-op? That's a lot of inconvenience that you didn't ask for.
Right.
They also have the mental anguish and pain and suffering. Well, that
we hear a lot about pain and suffering. What is that?
A, it's your physical pain. I mean, one thing we'll have a plaintiff go up there and say, how has your life changed? So yes, you have medical bills. Yes, I couldn't go to work. I lost X amount of time, or I lost all my vacation time. I lost all my sick time, every PTO day I had to use, and then some. And now I'm on FMLA. I wasn't even getting paid. Or I can't go back to the job I was at. That's lessening of earning capacity.
Now, how typically do you present that, the lessening of earning capacity?
Lessening of earning capacity doesn't come up that often. But in the case, there's not very many cases on it in Virginia.
Right.
But the case is that say, I think the case was a cabinet maker. It was a guy who made cabinets, loved to do it, work with his hands. Got an injury, could not do it, got another job, paid more, but still was allowed to present to the jury this lessening of earning capacity. What he wanted to do, he could no longer do. So sometimes people aren't doing jobs for money. Sometimes right. They're doing it because
they love it.
Right. It's their livelihood. And now I couldn't remember his hands or something. Couldn't do what he normally did. That is a damage to the jury.
So someone like me, for example, I come from a flying family. So my dad was a commercial pilot, military pilot, my uncle, et cetera. Daughter's a flight attendant. But I practice law for a living. Suppose I were injured in an accident, I couldn't fly anymore. How would you figure out the value of that to present to a jury?
Well, that to me is a life-altering thing, that you can't do a hobby. When someone comes to us, a plaintiff comes to us, it's not one-dimensional. It's who they are as a person overall. So yes, you might have a neck injury, a back injury. We'll deal with that with your doctors. But how has this affected you? If you can't fly anymore, and this was something you loved to do, something you did with your family, people who are hikers, people who are runners, people who vacation with their family and suddenly can't go on any long trips where there's any excursions because their back or their neck or their legs or their hips, their knees, something is wrong. That is a damage. How is it not? Right. So somebody, because of no fault to your own, has taken away something that was really what you loved to do. I absolutely love to read, right? And if I was in an accident where my sight was taken away, yes, I can listen to books, but I also like to read books. Right. Is that a damage? Absolutely.
Absolutely. Or a brain injury, for example.
Brain injury. So this is something we get to present to the jury, like 1 through 8, if we want to, and go through each one and explain to them how they can give that. Is anything ever going to make somebody 100% whole? No.
Unfortunately, no.
No, it's not. But they could try.
Right. Now, you talked about the difference between economic damages, the medical bills, the lost wages, and the non-economic damages, the disfigurement, the inconvenience, et cetera. Can you explain the role of solace witnesses in the non-economic damages?
So a lot of times we'll tell our clients before we're going to trial, not only the doctors, but you want to have those people that can come up and testify on your behalf. Who knows you? Who has seen you before and who has seen you after, and what changes have they noticed? Most of the time, it's great to have somebody who has absolutely no economic advantage here. It's hard with a spouse. Of course, you always want the spouse because they're there, and the spouse will obviously probably get some, benefit from a verdict, of course. I always say, who can I get? Pastor from your church, the person that runs the gym that you go to all the time, a member of your gardening club, somebody in your neighborhood book club. Do you have a dog walking group? And I can have one of them come in. And they're testifying, well, plaintiff did X, Y, Z. This accident occurred and now they're doing only X or no longer Y and Z, or they're getting tired. I had a woman one time who was a bowler, huge bowler. She was on 3 bowling leagues. And we had somebody say that she can only bowl now on 1. So it's showing she was trying to continue to live her life, but it definitely impacted where she couldn't do 3 anymore. She could only do 1. Mm. I had one person who came in who was a gardening club member. And she goes, we used to make floral arrangements all the time, but a lot of it was picking fresh flowers. And she didn't do that anymore. She more sat down instead of doing all the bending over. And it might not seem like a lot, but when you start to realize how much one injury can impact somebody's, like, blooms out and really impacts a lot of their life. Somebody, maybe if you were a babysitter, if you're younger, boy or girl, and you babysat for a family, and now you can't do that anymore because you can't pick the child up, or you can't play with the child as much as you used to, or maybe you were a dog walker.
And grandparents, now for example.
Yeah, now you can take care of small dogs, but you can no longer walk the German Shepherd down the block. So all of those things, I think, go to damages. And that has to be presented to the jury of how much one incident has become life-changing.
Have you had the cases where someone, say, injures their back, but they have a history of back problems?
Oh,
does
yes.
that foreclose the client's ability to pursue the back treatment, or how do you handle that?
If you're an adjuster, it does. But they think so. How, I think one doctor in the Richmond area explained pre-existing conditions to me so perfectly that your whole life, you're pretty much going on this like roller coaster up the hill, and you get to the top when you're about 40 years old, and then you start to go down slowly. But if, say, after 40, you're slammed in the rear by a Dodge Ram at 70 miles an hour, you're going to send that roller coaster down pretty fast. A lot of times we have things going on in our bodies that we don't even know. They're asymptomatic. I would expect that if you did a spine X-ray on me, I'm going to have some degenerative spine condition. I'm 46 years old.
Arthritis is that?
But I don't, I'm not bothered by it. I don't have back pain. I don't, I can run, I can walk, I go to the gym. But if I'm hit in the rear, it could take something that was completely asymptomatic and activate it. Well, the good old jury instructions say the same thing. You can't collect for the initial injury, so that underlying condition or that pre-existing neck injury or that pre-existing back injury. But if someone comes along and causes you a harm and accelerates it, exacerbates it, makes it harder to treat, you absolutely can recover for that. And I say that, and it goes for anyone. I mean, I have a child who was born with some orthopedic issues, so he's 18 now. If he gets hit in the rear and I get hit in the rear, he's going to feel something more than I do. And that doesn't mean, I mean, he's a walking pre-existing condition. I mean, that wouldn't keep him from recovering. There are people who have brittle bone disease that doesn't also prevent them from recovery. And that's a tough thing that we're battling all the time, because you had somebody who might have had arthritis or in their shoulder. Well, now you've torn it and the arthritis is getting worse and they maybe never took medicine for it. Now they have to take medicine for it. So just having a pre-existing condition, we learned first week of law school, you remember eggshell plaintiff.
Right.
You got to take the plaintiff as you see them. We'd all love somebody who's in the pinnacle of perfect health, but that's not it. You got to take the plaintiff as you see them.
All right. You use a metaphor, eggshell plaintiff. Can you explain that?
Right. So they, in law school, they would say if your plaintiff was made of eggshells and you hit into them and maybe it's 20 miles an hour, you wouldn't expect them to break into a million pieces. But if they do, you know, you're responsible for that. Right. We can't pick and choose, you know, our plaintiffs. Everybody's got a story. And most people, I would say, especially once you're hitting your 30s and 40s, you're starting to get arthritis. You're getting degenerative conditions.
Whether you know it or not, you've got it.
Exactly. And now, especially if you didn't take arthritis medication, but now all of a sudden you have arthritis, well, that stinks. And that's just, that's not fair. And how much do those medications cost, and how long are you going to have to take them? That's a damage, and that also then becomes part of your economic damages.
What do you advise your clients to do in situations where, well, let me step back. If you're in an accident, it's not planned. No. It happens randomly, no matter what your life has in store. But suppose you're in an accident and you're about to go on a vacation with your family, or you're going to get married in 3 months and go on a honeymoon. What do you advise your clients to do about these pre-organized activities?
You know, and I always say, I go back to the woman I was talking about with the bowling. And I think the reason she did so well in front of a jury is because she was real. She said, you know, I'm in pain, but my life is, I'm not going to just sit in a corner and not live my life. And there are a lot of people who had, some people have canceled their vacations if it's too close to the injury. I always ask them for their receipts. If they're not able to get their money back for their flights, if they're not able to get their money back for the hotel, whatever the cancellation policy is, I think that that is part of their damage. Or if they went on their honeymoon and they were planning on parasailing, but they couldn't do that. Instead, they can sit on the beach, but they're not going to do any of the excursions that they had planned. That is absolutely part of your damages. So I would say to someone, you know, it's really discretionary. I know that they've, the defense attorneys especially, I had somebody once that was, had a very, another TBI case, and they said, well, here's you on your boat. He said, well, I have a brain injury, but I can still be a passenger on a boat, you know? And they still have to live their lives, but he's like, I'm not on the tube in the back of the boat anymore. You know, I used to sit with the kids and do the tubing. So I think it's very good for plaintiffs to start thinking about at the beginning of their case, how is this impacting their life overall? From the moment they get up, hey, what about sleep? Interrupted sleep. It's huge.
Oh, that is huge, yes.
Huge.
Especially now with the studies showing that sleep is so important overall health.
It used to be a big thing. I know a lot of times, like I was even talking to somebody here today about how we don't wear our heels as much anymore. But if a woman had done something with their ankle and she said, oh, I can't wear my heels anymore. I used to love wearing heels. I can only wear flat-soled shoes or sneakers. I mean, maybe that sounds trivial, but it's not if that's part of who you were as a person. You know, if Carrie Bradshaw in Sex and the City wasn't wearing her Manolos, that was problematic. So, you know, each little thing, you have to think about their lives from the moment they get up to the moment they go to sleep, and then how are they sleeping? And who are they as a person, and how did this affect every area of their lives?
Yeah, I had a client one time who was injured in an accident and had to have an ankle fusion. And she could no longer wear heels to go to church. Well, the church was a big part of her life, and getting, you know, dolled up to go to church and listen to what the pastor had to say, and then the social activities afterwards, it really just bothered her that she couldn't do that anymore. So I know exactly what you're talking about there.
It's sad. Or I'll even bring up the dog example. You know, I know you and I both have bigger dogs. They pull on a leash. And if this is your companion and all of a sudden you can't walk the dog the way you used to, or you have to hire somebody to do that, there's another thing too. Mowing the grass or something like that. Household chores that you used to do, and all of a sudden you're injured and you can't do it. And now I've had to pay a gardener. I have to pay somebody to walk my dog. I have to pay somebody to take my mom to her doctor's appointments. Aren't those also damages? I mean, these are things you were not anticipating.
Absolutely.
I tell clients, you keep every receipt for CVS. I don't care if you're buying a lidocaine patch or
aspirin.
Anything, you keep that Epsom salt for your baths. I mean, these are all things that you would not have had to buy had this
Bingo.
Not happened.
Yep. Well, I got all kinds of books here on damages, but let's talk about this one that can really affect the outcome of a case, liens in personal injury cases. Can you explain to us what a lien is?
Yes.
And how you handle that in your practice?
Liens is something that, you know, a jury's never going to hear about, but we have to be very cognizant of. And liens come into play with multiple things. If a plaintiff is on Medicare, if a plaintiff is on Medicaid, if a plaintiff has treated at the VA, plaintiff has TRICARE, which is military, or if plaintiff works for a place that uses an ERISA plan, which is a federally funded health insurance plan. All of these are liens. Also, if you have a child support lien, that is a big one. Into play. Things that a lot of people don't think about because they will impact your case. So if you're going to go settle your case with the insurance adjuster right at the beginning and Medicare has paid out your bills, you better hold some of that money aside for when their lien comes in. Otherwise, you can be potentially losing your benefits. Big problems with Medicare, but lose your benefits for Medicaid. You could lose your benefits through your health insurance plan with your employer if you don't pay attention to these liens. So one thing we tell clients is your job is to get better. Our job is to take care of all of that.
All the details.
But we do. We ask people if they have child support liens because the DCSE requires that they're paid back out of a personal injury settlement.
And that's a division of child support enforcement?
Yes, in Virginia. So, and even if it's an out-of-state, we need to know about it. So those are the types of things that come into play. Always tell my clients about potential liens.
Does a workers' comp come into play in some of your
workers'
practice?
Workers' comp as well. In fact, if you have a workers' comp tied in with your personal injury case, you better not settle your personal injury case until you have talked and gotten the blessing from the workers' comp carrier, because that can have devastating effects on a workers' comp settlement and a workers' comp award. So yes, workers' comp is another one. If that's coming into play, I've written away to the workers' comp commission to make sure there are no liens in certain cases where I'm not sure.
Now, what is happening that workers' comp has a lien?
If a person gets injured on the job, but they're injured by a third party, so if you're driving in the scope of your employment, but you're hit by Mr. X, well, workers' comp will kick in, but also personal injury because someone hurt you. If somebody in your own office, you know, hits you with something, it's going to be, or you fall in your own office, there's no third party. It's strictly workers' comp. But if it's something that happens from a third party, so if you're at work, but a general contractor on the job slams you with a hammer by accident, well, now you got the general contractor in, plus you have workers' comp, plus you have third party action. So,
and that's where workers' comp insurance company is paying the medical bills?
Yes, and sometimes some lost wages. Yeah, that's why you have to be so careful. You don't want to lose that award for people.
Right. Kimberly, thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Enjoyed it. And to our listening audience, that was part of our series of From Injury to Justice. Please continue to follow us, and we'll have more information to help you with your personal injury case.